Welcome to the Full Press Fantasy Pod, part of Full Press Coverage. My name is Kyle Senra. My co-host Brad Harbin can't be here for this week. Hopefully next week, as we get into Rookie Prospect Month, Brad will return. We'll have hopefully a couple guests throughout those four episodes, positions concentrated on incoming rookie quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends. However, for now, we're going to focus on the veteran players, the NFL transactions that occurred very recently. On the previous episode, Brad and I kind of detailed all the quarterback movement that happened. That took up so much space. We've got a whole episode on all the other positions. Before we get to NFL transactions, of course, we love fantasy football. We love dynasty fantasy football. And I'll kick us off here with a dynasty trade that I recently completed this week. So it's a 10-team, one quarterback league, PPR, start 10. There's bonuses for big play scoring, but no positional bonuses, like no tight end premium or anything. But yeah, pretty conventional league. I'd say there is a couple of IDP spots as well. So it's start 9 on offense, and then it is start 10, and then start 12 total with the two IDP. This is almost a follow-up to a trade I made maybe about a month ago or a couple months ago now even. I gave up the 310 in the rookie draft to get Romeo Dubs. Now, I recently acquired the 310, and I actually just gave up Tyler Boyd to the person with the 310. And it's funny. He was the defending champ going into last year, so he had won in 2022, but he went first to worst and ended up with the 101 overall in the rookie draft, but also ended up having an extra third. So I remember this league is commissioned by Danny and Dee from the Speak On It podcast. And Danny was mentioning at 310, and I remember one of the live streams on Speak On It, he had mentioned, oh yeah, I don't really know what I'm going to get for this 310. Like, what kind of player is going to be there? I might just take anything I can get. So hearing that, I decided, you know what? I'm not sure about Tyler Boyd. Let me go send out Tyler Boyd for the 310. And sure enough, that got accepted. Since then, Tyler Boyd actually hasn't found a free agent home yet. He is still out there as a free agent, available to sign for any team, yet no one's signed him yet. Now, there are some rumors. Talked about a few weeks ago, the franchise tag, T. Higgins. He's apparently put in a trade request because it seems like he can't reach a long-term extension with the team from that franchise tag. And I wonder if the Bengals are waiting to see if they trade away Higgins, they might then go out and buy re-sign Tyler Boyd, which actually might make him a strong buy in dynasty and fantasy football in general. But if they can't find a trade partner, they just have to go this year with T. Higgins. They may not be able to afford to pay Tyler Boyd. So it's an interesting conundrum, but I think for right now, I'd much rather have Romeo Dubs than Tyler Boyd. And I know the person who gave me Romeo Dubs, he's already got, I think, 5 third-round picks. Now he has 6 third-round picks. So he's thinking there's value for him. It's D, the other co-host of the Speak On It podcast. He thinks there's value getting that many thirds. And I do agree. If you're going to trade for picks and you can bunch them together, that increases your value. It gives you more control over the board in that round. And for myself, everyone knows I'm a Packers fan. I don't think I have any Packers players on this team. So it gives me a one shot at a Packer. And maybe they do draft somebody and there's competition for Romeo Dubs. But as of right now, in 3 wide receiver sets, that 11 personnel, which the Packers love to utilize, probably their most used formation personnel grouping, he's one of the starters alongside Jaden Reed and Christian Watson. He's probably third on the team in targets, I would have to say, if I had to guess this far out. But I think it just gives me a good depth wide receiver option that's definitely usable. I think there could be he's in the threshold range where it'll put him in your lineup is going to be fine. So I thought, I saw Dubs get put on the trade block. I figured, can I get him for the 310? Again, knowing how I acquired the 310, I'd much rather have Romeo Dubs than Tyler Boyd. But we're here to talk about NFL transactions. And actually, there's a few trades that happened. We've talked about a few already, various positions, quarterback trades especially, but there are a few wide receiver trades. One more that kind of happened recently in this free agent period, hadn't got a chance to talk about it on other episodes yet. The Chicago Bears acquired Keenan Allen for a 4th round pick. It's the 144th overall that will go to the Los Angeles Chargers. So major turnaround in the Chargers wide receiver room. I could also say that for the Bears as they acquire Keenan Allen likely to be the number two receiver behind DJ Moore on this team, which I'll come out and say, like, I think for Keenan Allen's value, this hurts. You were tied to Justin Herbert as his unquestioned number one target. The sheer volume of pass attempts there was going to make that very profitable. Now you go to as a number two option, likely. I mean, maybe is the number one option ahead of DJ Moore. I don't think that's going to be the case, especially how good DJ Moore played last year. But now suddenly these guys are having to compete for targets against each other with a rookie quarterback coming in. I also don't think this is a great move for DJ Moore. I would have preferred if like it would have been better. You know, it's to me, because that's two negatives. A, extra competition where he's not. And I mean, I still think, to be honest, both Allen and DJ Moore should still get targets. And it's everyone else that on the team that's probably getting hurt. Those two are probably secure. But the other negative is that having to play with a rookie quarterback. So I don't love it for Keenan Allen. I don't necessarily love it for DJ Moore either. It's a slight negative for both. And we'll see. I guess the one thing with Moore is that this is probably the best receiver he's ever played with. Curtis Samuel is probably the next closest, but he's never really gotten any real competition to be the alpha on the team. Keenan Allen, in theory, provides that. A little bit older, though. That's why if I had to choose one, I'd still choose DJ. It's interesting. Again, a lot of trade movement. Actually, the next topic to talk about is a follow-up on one of the trades we discussed earlier. Jerry Jeudy being traded to the Cleveland Browns from the Denver Broncos. And the Browns actually just recently reached an extension with Jerry Jeudy. So far, based on the information I have, the max earnings on this contract could make it the third highest paid contract to any wide receiver in this free agent period. Actually, let's talk about who those top three are. So we've got Jerry Jeudy at 58 million maximum over 3 years. I think there's something like over 40 million of that is guaranteed. It's pretty big money to Jerry Jeudy. And I think for the Browns, they also don't really have wide receivers on next year's books yet in terms of contracts. I believe this was the final year of Amari Cooper's contract. And the same thing with Elijah Moore. It's the final year of his rookie contract. From a 1 year perspective, I don't think Jerry Jeudy is going to be the number one receiver on this team. I still think that's Amari Cooper. But maybe in 2025, Jerry Jeudy is the number one receiver here for the Browns. If they can't acquire someone else, the expensive contracts they already have are too big to go and sign an alpha wide receiver in free agency, and they can't draft one. Yeah, I could see Jerry Jeudy entering next year as the number one receiver. I don't know if that's the likely scenario, but it certainly is a possibility. But based on the fact that without even having even seen him in training camp, let alone played games with Jeudy on the Browns, they seem to already decide they like him a lot more than Elijah Moore. Both were traded for last year. They traded for Elijah Moore this year, Jeudy. But Elijah Moore right now is eligible for an extension as a second round receiver the year after Jeudy. Last year or this year right now is Jerry Jeudy's fifth year option. So they're both on the final years of their contracts. They could have extended either Jeudy or Moore or both, really. And they've decided to prioritize Jeudy. So that tells me the Browns clearly think Jerry Jeudy is better than Elijah Moore. I don't really see the difference. To me, they're basically the same player. Their best tools are route running. The hands can be questionable, though. And so that's why I'm still banking on Amari Cooper and maybe even David Njoku ahead of him. But good serious money for Jerry Jeudy. So again, 3 years could be up to 58 million. Not quite as much as Michael Pittman got. So this is another follow-up. We're talking about the franchise tag and T. Higgins. He couldn't reach a long-term agreement. A few of the players who got tagged already have. One of those is Michael Pittman. And the Colts locked him up on a 3-year, $70 million contract. So it's great for the Colts because if they're building around this young quarterback in Anthony Richardson, his number one receiver is clearly Michael Pittman. And now you give him Pittman, locked in for the next 3 seasons. So throughout Richardson's rookie contract, he's going to have Michael Pittman there. So that's the best way to help your quarterback develop is to not take away his main weapons. And so great for Pittman, I think, as well. Now, he gets some long-term stability. Certainly, that's a nice paycheck there coming in. From a dynasty value, though, we don't have to worry about, okay, where is he going to go? Is he going to go on a team where he may not be the clear number one? He is going to lead this Colts team in targets as long as he's healthy for the majority of the season. And so from a dynasty perspective, I still like Pittman as a top 10 wide receiver in dynasty right now. I've got him kind of in a tier basically with Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson. I like all three of those guys better than, say, I like Tyreek Hill and Devontae Adams. Two incredible producers still that I have basically as the back end of wide receiver ones in Dynasty. I think they're like my wide receiver 10 and 11, respectively. But I prefer Pittman and Olave and Wilson to, even though I think, if we're thinking just 2024, I'd bank on Hill and Adams outproducing all three of those guys. But again, with Dynasty being 3 year windows, so I think over these 3 years, I think I'd still prefer to bank on Pittman, Olave, and Garrett Wilson. Now, Pittman had a good paycheck, but the biggest payday for a receiver in this free agency period went to Calvin Ridley, leaving the Jaguars, but not leaving the division, signing with the Tennessee Titans on a 4 year, $92 million contract. So, my quick takeaway from this, I guess it's again, they're trying to develop a young quarterback in Will Levis. So, I think it makes sense to a certain extent from the Titans' perspective. Now, 4 years for a receiver that's, I think, about to be 30, especially at this type of money, that could be very risky. But ultimately, I understand why they did it. I don't know if they, I mean, they could have spent probably significantly less and got close to as good of a receiver as Ridley. Because to me, the problem fantasy-wise at Ridley is I'm not sure he's better than DeAndre Hopkins. In fact, I'm pretty certain he's not better than DeAndre Hopkins. So if I'm drafting one of them, even from a redraft perspective, I think I'd rather have Hopkins than Ridley. And yeah, Ridley's contract's longer. I think there's maybe just like a 2 year difference at most between the two. So I mean we're talking about two receivers over 30. So it's not that Ridley, I think, will be better dynasty-wise than Hopkins. I mean, and I think it'll just come down to who you think will be better this year. Because they're at a point with their ages that there's not long-term viability. There's not if Ridley smashes this year, you're not suddenly gonna there's not gonna be suddenly a boost in dynasty value that you can go trade him for. Now, to be fair, last year, even before he played a game for the Jags, it kind of boosted up his dynasty value quite a bit. I thought he was a sell then. And with this contract, might also make him a sell for that reason. Because again, I think DeAndre Hopkins is just better. Better hands, could argue better route runner. Yeah, Ridley's probably got a bit more speed. Speed has never been really Hopkins' thing. He's not a he's an outside receiver because he's so good at contested catches, because his hands are so strong. He's got one of the best set of hands in the NFL. Like it's him and Justin Jefferson. I think those are the two best catchers, pure catchers of the football. And that's not going to go away with age. That's pure technique. So Hopkins is going to be able to do that for his whole career. Also means a lot of touchdown upside because of the red zone prowess. So yeah, I'd rather have Hopkins. And as a result, maybe I'm devaluing Ridley a little bit, but I don't see. I think in Dynasty, I think it would stick the same because I think Hopkins is going to outproduce Ridley. Dynasty-wise, I'd rather have Hopkins than Ridley, even if Ridley is on the longer-term contract. So that might be a controversial take, but I think Ridley's at an age, and he came out as an old prospect too. I think he was 24 during his rookie season. So it's, I guess, the one thing with Ridley we've always known it's going to be, a track record. I think compared to DJ Moore from that same draft class, those were the two first rounders that year. I think DJ Moore just turned 25 or 26. That was Ridley's age as a rookie, 24. I mean, I think it, the fact that those two seem to be really opposite, even though they were the same draft class, there is this like big age gap there, which again, even with Keenan Allen coming along, I'd still rather have DJ Moore than Calvin Ridley. But yeah, my quick takeaway with Ridley is that I think he's a sell based on this. Looking at other receivers now, we've got Mike Evans, who re-signed with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, a 2 year, $52 million deal. I wonder if they had signed him before the season like he wanted, if this would have been cheaper. So the Bucs paid for the mistake of not re-signing him before that. He put up a great season with Baker, so expect that to be the same. And yeah, we talked about it last episode. Baker got a ton of money too, so that combo should remain the same. So yeah, I think like I'd rather have Mike Evans than Calvin Ridley. Just to the reference the guy we just talked about, or even DeAndre Hopkins, to be fair. Rather have Mike Evans than Keenan Allen. For all these aging receivers, Mike Evans seems to be the best of them. Probably put up another 1,000-yard season since he's never not done that in his career. So assuming he's healthy enough to play those games. But yeah, that's really, I think, the top end of the receivers in terms of who was signed in free agency. And then we get to kind of a bit of a tier break upcoming here. Apparently, 3-year contracts seem to be the norm this year for a lot of these, we'll say, mid-tier wide receivers. There's three guys that got money to leave their teams on 3-year contracts, all between 30 and 40 million in terms of maximum value on these contracts. We've got Gabe Davis signing with the Jacksonville Jaguars, 3 years, 39 million, an identical contract to Darnell Mooney with the Atlanta Falcons, 3 years, 39 million. And then finally, Curtis Samuel joining the Buffalo Bills on a 3-year, $30 million contract. I would imagine like none of these guys are being signed to be team's number one receivers. For the Jags, I still think that's Christian Kirk. For the Falcons, I mean, it's likely Drake London could also be the tight end Kyle Pitts, to be honest. The Bills is probably the same thing. It's probably Stephon Diggs and even the tight end Dalton Kincaid ahead of Curtis Samuel. So I don't know that we should necessarily expect any of these guys to have monster boosts in production. And really, quarterback-wise, like Gabe Davis, he's not getting a better quarterback with Trevor Lawrence. He's leaving a pretty good quarterback in Josh Allen. And he still gets a good one, but I wouldn't view that as a QB upgrade. Darnell Mooney, okay, that's going to be a QB upgrade because now he's going to be tied to Kirk Cousins, assuming he returns healthy. Curtis Samuel, to me, though, he's the one that gets the big upgrade because now he gets Josh Allen. He gets to play with Josh Allen and not Sam Howell or Jacoby Brissett or likely whatever rookie quarterback the Commanders take this year. So I think all three could have value. I guess the one thing with Gabe Davis is he looks to be the team's deep threat. I mean, you could to a certain extent you can have Zay Jones do that as well, but those look to be the two outside receivers with Christian Kirk taking the most targets out of the slot. Where I think it's the opposite for Mooney and probably even Samuel, those guys probably are playing in the slot. That's where they've operated best throughout their careers. Samuel does have the capacity to play on the outside, but considering who they already have there and Stephon Diggs, I wonder if they're bringing him in specifically to be the slot receiver. They want to own the middle more. Between Curtis Samuel and Dalton Kincaid, they want to concentrate probably a lot of targets. Easier looks for Josh Allen over the middle instead of, because he is capable of hitting the deep ball with great accuracy, but it's tougher to connect on those. You need the receiver to run the route properly. You need him to catch those. Maybe make that a little easier for Josh Allen with more able targets over the middle. And I'm sure Kirk Cousins doesn't want to stand in the pocket coming off this Achilles injury. He probably wants to be operating with quick throwing a lot of times too. So similar with Mooney and Samuel, I view them really getting kind of similar roles. I'm less likely to invest in Gabe Davis. I think, because here's the thing. 2 years ago, Zay Flowers, Zay Jones had 121 targets. And I don't think Gabe Davis has even ever come close to that. Let me just look that up for a second. But I mean, it would shock me if Gabe Davis has ever even got 100 targets in his career. So because of that, Zay Jones, okay, I mean, he's gotten close. He had in only 15 games, so actually with a full 17 games, he might have reached it. But in 2022, he had 93 targets. Barely 50% catch rate, though he only had 48 receptions. Yeah, it's I think Gabe Davis, he's been so boom or bust during his career. Why would he be anything different? I definitely would rather invest in Christian Kirk, but I think I'd also probably rather have Zay Jones. So of these three, Gabe Davis, Mooney, and Samuel, Davis is probably the one I want the least. Even though I think dynasty-wise, I believe he'd be the youngest, but because his production, I just don't think it'll be there. We're at a point where, I mean, I don't think he's ever going to have, even if he is younger, I don't think he's going to gain that longer-term value. So because it is so much tied to production, yeah, I'd rather have Mooney for sure in dynasty, probably even Curtis Samuel in dynasty over Gabe Davis. So Davis is one guy of these three anyway that I'm fading. Kendrick Bourne coming off his injury, he tore an ACL last year. He ended up signing a 3-year, $19 million contract with the Patriots. We still have no idea what the Patriots are going to do from the three spot. I imagine conventional thinking is they'll take a quarterback at three, which I think is definitely a possibility. But I also don't think it precludes them from just drafting a wide receiver. Maybe they want Marvin Harrison Jr., this generational wide receiver prospect. I think almost the likelier thing, though, is they might trade out. So there's a chance there's a rookie quarterback. There's a chance it's Jacoby Brissett and Nathan Rourke fighting for the job, which probably means it's Jacoby Brissett, but I'll still have hope. Especially if Nathan Rourke's the quarterback. I love any receiver tied to him. There's good upside for all of them. Pop Douglas, DeMario Douglas, couldn't think of his name, but the rookie from last year for the Patriots, he seemed to really emerge after Kendrick Bourne's injury as, to be the Patriots' number one wide receiver. I think it's back to that this year where those two really are fighting for that role. Juju Smith-Schuster is still there. I don't know that he contributes that much to challenge those two. I still think Bourne is worth buying. I think it'll especially be really cheap coming off the injury. But speaking of injuries, there's a couple of guys that signed 1 year contracts, seemingly almost as like prove it deals, for the fact that they had such injured campaigns last year. So we got Mike Williams signing with the New York Jets a 1 year $15 million contract. Marquise Brown with the Kansas City Chiefs a 1 year $11 million contract. So, in terms of elite quarterbacks, you've got two of the best ever to play in Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers. So they both get tied to those elite producers. There's also this like elite alpha receiver on each team. Now, completely opposite ends of their careers. You've got Travis Kelce very much towards the end of his career, but still incredibly productive. He's going to lead the Chiefs in targets. I think that's not really in question. Now, the Jets at the opposite end, they've got a really young receiver that appears to be a future alpha in the NFL. Current alpha for the Jets, Garrett Wilson. So Marquise Brown and Mike Williams aren't competing with those guys for targets. Garrett Wilson, Travis Kelce, they've got their target set. They're gonna earn well over 100 targets each, regardless of who else is on that team. Those targets are set. Truthfully, looking at the Jets wide receiver room, there really isn't much there to say Mike Williams can't be the number two receiver on the Jets. I think. I'm gonna bring up their depth chart now. There's rumors Corey Davis might return. He retired last year, and it sounds like he wants to come out of retirement. But looking at what our lads is saying, they have Garrett Wilson, Mike Williams, and Xavier Gibson as the starting three receivers for the Jets. I mean, Alan Lazard's there, Jason Brownlee, Malik Taylor, Lance McCutcheon, Irvin Charles. I've never even heard of that guy's name. So yeah, no, like based on this depth chart right now, Mike Williams is the number two receiver on the Jets. So I think that really helps that value. Is that he gets tied to Aaron Rodgers. I mean, look at him. His whole career, he's had Philip Rivers, Justin Herbert, Aaron Rodgers, some pretty good quarterbacks to be tied to. Williams is kind of like Gabe Davis. It's that boom bust feel. Feels like the lows just aren't as low as Gabe Davis, where he can go, oh, he went 2, 3 weeks in a row without a catch. You're not really gonna get that from Mike Williams. But there could be just, okay, one catch for 20 yards, and that's it. He's also recovering from an ACL tear. It happened super early in the season, so I'd imagine the expectation is that Mike Williams is ready for week one, but we don't know for sure. Marquise Brown's injury wasn't as significant, so I think he's definitely going to be ready for week one. Again, both could, and just like any player who plays football and goes to training camp, could get hurt in training camp, and suddenly we're dealing with a new injury. But based on their current injuries, the timeline should be set for both to start week one. I guess the complicated thing with Marquise Brown is, where do you relate him to Rashee Rice with the Chiefs? Like, who is the number one receiver there? The number one wide receiver there? Obviously, the number one pass catcher will be Travis Kelce. I guess Brown and Rice, in a sense, do complement each other well. Brown, a great deep threat down the field. Rashee Rice seems like his best strength last year was catching things short and doing things after the catch. Now, Brown can also do that too. And I do think Rice has a bit of downfield route running in him. Dynasty wise, though, again, especially knowing that Rice is on the rookie contract, he's going to be tied for Patrick Mahomes for these next 3 seasons. Just a 1 year deal for Brown. I think in Dynasty, I definitely want Rashee Rice. I think what's going to be really interesting, though, and really difficult for me is in redraft this year. Because I think I do flip. For the first time, I'm going to, I prefer this player in Dynasty, this player in redraft. But a lot of the arguments I've been making today have been, okay, I'm going with the same player in both. This is probably one, I think, because of Brown's deep threat running ability. And we can look at the other receivers the Chiefs have had there as those field stretchers. Marquez Valdes-Scantling. Yes, Kadarius Toney's not really a field stretcher. It tends to be like that was a Rashee Rice kind of replacing Kadarius Toney's role. But Sky Moore, all these other fast receivers, Justin Watson, these outside guys the Chiefs had. Marquise Brown is so much better than all of them. He's got a great receiving profile. He's earned targets throughout his whole career, no matter where he is. Even with Mark Andrews on his team, there were seasons where Brown was leading the Ravens in targets. So because of that ability to earn targets, and the high value of earning deep targets, especially from the best quarterback in the NFL. Tell me a 1 year investment in 2024 only redraft leagues. I think I'd rather have Marquise Brown than Rashee Rice. So I don't think this hurts Rashee Rice's dynasty value because I think the long-term approach is there. But I think this definitely does hurt Rashee Rice in redraft. And because of that, I think it might dip. Maybe have lowered him a little bit in the dynasty rankings as a result of this. If that thinking is really conventional in a lot of your leagues, maybe Rashee Rice is actually a really good dynasty buy because of this Marquise Brown signing. I also think Brown's a good dynasty buy because people have kind of wrote him off super cheap. I think he can be acquired so cheaply, and he's probably got a bit of a boost from the Chiefs. I don't know if he's got enough of a boost though. So I'd consider buying both of these wide receivers in dynasty. I certainly would rather buy them than buy Travis Kelce in dynasty, who honestly, even at his age, might still be more expensive to buy in dynasty than either of those two wide receivers. Certainly, I think he's going to be way more expensive than Marquise Brown. So I'd prefer to invest in Kelce in redraft. I guess Rice in dynasty and Marquise Brown probably sprinkled in both formats, to be honest. Just a couple other receivers that, I mean, there's a long list of receivers that we didn't get contract information. It looks to be like 1 year contracts, fairly cheap. Got a couple more contracts here with some data though. Ray-Ray McCloud signed with the Atlanta Falcons, a 2 year, $6 million deal. They also lost Cordarrelle Patterson, and I wonder if this has more to do with special teams than it does on offense. Certainly, Darnell Mooney is a much better receiver than Ray-Ray McCloud. So, also think they've got Austin Mack, who they signed from the Montreal Alouettes. He led the Alouettes in receiving yards last year. He was their number one receiver his first year in the CFL. That's kind of a tough adjustment. The new rules, I'd say the waggle, but he was mostly on the outside, so he wasn't really using the waggle. That's more of a slot receiver thing, a slot back, where they're running up to the line of scrimmage and they're trying to time it with the snap so they don't go offside. It's actually quite amazing how very little receivers go offside in the CFL because you could so easily do it. They're so good at the waggle. So Mack didn't really do that, but still, with the wider field, there's adjustments to be made going from NFL football to CFL football. And Austin Mack transitioned seamlessly right from the get-go. He was the Alouettes' alpha in the passing game, helped them win a championship, their first since 2010. And so I think Austin Mack is probably a better receiver than Ray-Ray McCloud as well. So the 2 year contract's nice, but to me, this is just a special team. Now, the next guy I'm talking about, Demarcus Robinson, I think he does have a role on offense. He really emerged last year as the number three receiver. He seemed to replace Tutu Atwell. And I mean, with Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp there, those two are always going to draw more attention. But Robinson had some really good spike weeks at the end of the year. If he went on a playoff run and we're starting him, Demarcus Robinson, super useful. And he returned to the Rams. I think the best case scenario, that was probably the most productive, consistent stretch over his whole career. I think there was the year he was with the Chiefs where Tyreek Hill got hurt early in the season. I think he missed maybe a month. And Robinson, even in that month stretch without Tyreek Hill, I think he had maybe one or two spike weeks, but wasn't as consistent as we saw him with the Rams last year. So I think it's good for Robinson. Super cheap buy, dynasty and redraft. I'm all for it. I think he's a great guy to add to teams. We got Brandon Powell on a 1 year, $2.7 million deal with the Vikings. The Vikings, who did lose Jalen Reagor to the Patriots, who signed a 1 year, $1.3 million deal. I don't think either is very relevant. I already talked about the Patriots. Like, I'd rather invest in Kendrick Bourne, Mario Douglas, probably even Juju over Jalen Reagor. Brandon Powell. I mean, so actually, the Vikings lost another receiver to the Patriots. KJ Osborne also signed with New England. So, to that effect, it seems like Powell was paid and was put on this team just because they lost so many other depth receivers, but he's clearly the number three behind Jefferson and Addison. I don't know that he's necessarily worth adding that much. And yeah, KJ Osborne, Reagor, just depth guys on the Patriots. I'm not overly interested. Oh yeah, I'll run down this list of names. These are all players that look to have just 1 year contracts, pretty close to league minimum. So we'll start in the AFC East. I already mentioned KJ Osborne with the Patriots. Mac Hollins went to the Bills. Braxton Berrios remained with the Miami Dolphins. They also re-signed River Craycraft. So they're, again, the depth behind their two main receivers, they mostly just retained them. Nelson Agholor returned with the Baltimore Ravens. I think he was, yeah, he was on the Ravens last year. No, he was with the Patriots at one point, but I believe last year on the Ravens. And then former Raven James Proche, who was with the Browns last year, has re-signed with the team. Van Jefferson on the Falcons last year with Arthur Smith decided to follow Arthur Smith to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Heck, he might be the number two receiver on Pittsburgh right now. So it actually is a good landing spot in that. There's tons of targets available. You know, maybe the tight ends, both the starting two tight ends, get more targets than the number two receiver at this point. Steelers could also still add. Of these like non-defined contract players, Noah Brown returning to the Houston Texans, I think that's huge. That's a guy I want to invest in. If he's the number three receiver in that team, which showed to support several receivers, I think at one point there were three different wide receivers last year that finished a single week as the wide receiver number one for the Houston Texans. Tank Dell did it. Noah Brown even did it. I'm pretty sure Nico Collins did it as well. Collins and Dell especially had several top 5 weeks. But Noah Brown definitely has some spike ceiling weeks. He's to me, he's Gabe Davis, but likely tied to a better quarterback so far. I mean, Stroud, I think, has shown more than Lawrence has. I also think he's going to probably be cheaper than Gabe Davis. So if you're thinking of getting a guy like Gabe Davis, I say just go and get Noah Brown. That I'd probably just rather have that instead. There's very little floor, but the ceiling is huge. In the case for both players, I think I'd just rather invest in this Texans offense than the Jags. Meanwhile, the Jags signed Devin Duvernay, of which feels like they already have that in Jamal Agnew. I know someone made that joke. Duvernay may be healthier, probably more impact on the return game. I think they've got their three wide receivers locked in, and like mentioned earlier, Christian Kirk, Zay Jones, Gabe Davis in that order. So I don't see much relevance for Devin Duvernay. Nick Westbrook-Ikhine returned to the Titans. They've brought in Calvin Ridley, so I think more competition there. Not so good for Westbrook-Ikhine. I think a lot of targets will go to Ridley and Hopkins, and then the tight end, Chigozie Okonkwo, will also clean some of that up. And I think the running backs, both of them, also get some work. We'll talk about the Titans running backs in a bit, though. Little Jordan Humphrey cannot play without Sean Payton, apparently, returned to Denver. So there's that. Sean Payton's favorite players, obviously, he signs him. Isaiah McKenzie to the New York Giants. The Eagles brought in a couple of players, Paris Campbell, as well as Devontae Parker. Probably competing for that number three receiver job. Jamison Crowder returning to the Commanders. They also signed Dante Pettis. Donovan Peoples-Jones returning to the to the Lions, sorry. Trent Sherfield signed by the Vikings. So mentioned earlier with Powell, because they lost so many receivers behind Jefferson and Addison, they needed to replenish that. So Sherfield's a guy they brought from the outside. Kadarius Hodge returns to the Falcons. David Moore returning to the Panthers. I can't remember where he was last year. I believe he started his career with the Carolina Panthers, returns there now. Cedric Wilson signed with the New Orleans Saints. Chris Moore signed with the Arizona Cardinals. It'd be interesting potentially. They're expected to draft a receiver. I think they still have Greg Dortch there as well, but a pretty thin receiving group. So Chris Moore might actually see some action. And Chris Conley with the San Francisco 49ers. So again, I already mentioned Noah Brown is the one name from this whole list that I really want to invest in. The rest, they're guys you can just pick up. You've got to, in Dynasty, if you've got to like spend anything of significance, I think I'd rather just not go down that route. All right, so now we're going to talk about running backs. We're going to get started actually with a trade. The Houston Texans decided to trade for a running back that was rumored to be released. Looked like the Cincinnati Bengals were about to cut Joe Mixon. And just before that transaction was completed, and for him to go through waivers, the Texans swooped in and just put a seventh round pick on the table, the 224th overall pick. And I think for the Bengals, it was, well, we're just going to release this guy anyway. May as well get something for him. So they gave him to the Texans to get a seventh. The Texans gave up the seventh to just not have to beat other teams in negotiation. Let's just go get Joe Mixon right away. So mentioned earlier with Noah Brown, Texans are a great offense to be part of. Certainly, I think there's a lot of touchdown opportunities for an offense that moves the ball so well. Joe Mixon also useful as a pass catcher as well. Considering though how good Stroud is at throwing to the outside and how successful they've been, I don't know that he's looking to dump down as often as, say, Joe Burrow might have. It does feel like that, which is crazy because it feels like a couple years ago that Texans O-line was complete trash, but it feels like that Texans O-line is at least as good, if not better, than what the Bengals have. So I think it's a good move for Mixon though, still. I like it. I think it's a positive for his fantasy value. Should have a pretty good season this year. The fact is, I believe this is the last year of his contract. So from a dynasty perspective, we'd love if the Texans extended him, I think, but guess we'll see. That might be something they decide to do, before the start of next offseason, but after this upcoming season in 2024, maybe in January or February, they decide to give him an extension after they've seen how things go. But yeah, Joe Mixon on the Houston Texans. Now for some big signings. Josh Jacobs signed a 4-year deal up to $48 million with the Packers. But based on the contract, I know there was a recent Full Press Packers episode that my co-host Jesse Hall and I did, and we talked about it, and it almost essentially looks like 1-year contract. So the Packers could very well just release Jacobs after this year. But he ends up on a good spot, good offensive line. It's actually really similar to Joe Mixon, a young quarterback who does have a lot of weapons to throw to. So again, I don't know that the dump off passes are necessarily going to be there. But I feel like that, I guess, a case for a lot of these free agent running backs, because Saquon Barkley signed a 3-year, $37.75 million deal with the Philadelphia Eagles. That has been a team that has not thrown to running backs very much. We even saw it with DeAndre Swift last year, career low. He had a career high in scrimmage yards. He had a career low in receptions. So just, yeah, efficiency on the ground. But really, Saquon, his whole career, one of his most important parts of his fantasy production profile has been the pass catching. There's been several years with the Giants where he is the number one target on the team overall. He's getting more catches, more targets than any other wide receivers, any other player on the team. To be honest, considering who the Eagles have and how much success they've had with them, I don't see Saquon Barkley getting more catches or certainly not more targets than definitely AJ Brown, but probably also DeVonta Smith. I would find that very difficult to think he gets more targets than any of those two. You want to tell me Saquon's competing against Dallas Goedert for the third target? I could see Saquon winning that in a certain sense, but I could also see Goedert getting that. So I'm lower on Saquon from this move. I know there's a lot of hype. I think if you have Saquon in Dynasty, this is a perfect sell window. I just do not love that spot for the Eagles. Likewise, I actually really like DeAndre Swift leaving the Eagles to go to the Bears on a 3-year, $24 million contract, just because I think he's got a chance to catch passes on that team. Rookie quarterback. Now there are again other weapons there too. Maybe he doesn't catch as many passes, but I think he's at least got the chance to regain the role he had at the Lions that was so productive, catching so many dump offs, running routes past the line of scrimmage. He really uses a receiving weapon. And now it's funny, a 3-year, $24 million is what Swift signed. Tony Pollard basically signed that exact same contract with the Tennessee Titans, 3-year, $24 million. This one I really don't like for Pollard. Fantasy, dynasty, I'm pretty out on Tony Pollard. I think he and Tajay Spears will be splitting things. And it could be they're both. I feel my fear with them is that it's undefined roles. They're gonna, okay, one drives one guy, one drives the other. There's not a specific passing down back. There's not a specific goal line back. So trying to figure out the matchups. Oh, this team, there's a lot of dump offs here for this team. Okay, let's play this running back. Or, oh, okay, this team is really bad goal line run defense. Let's go for that goal line back. I think that could be very difficult. To be honest, I've got no shares of either Pollard or Spears in Dynasty. Unless one of them is really cheap in redrafts, I'm also not really looking to draft him in that format either. So I'm kind of out, especially on Pollard. In Dynasty, I'd rather have Spears than Pollard. And that's simply because Pollard now on his third contract. Spears is still on his rookie contract. So if we're talking running backs and the age difference, yeah, give me the younger guy. Because I think they'll both have very similar production this year. Devin Singletary signed a 3-year, $16.5 million contract with the New York Giants. And that, I mean, he could be a true workhorse there. The Giants could also maybe address that during the draft, but I think that's a I mean, he was leaving a great situation in Houston where he might have been splitting, though, with Dameon Pierce to a spot where now he's got all the work himself, although it's not nearly as productive of an offense. So I think it's kind of a net neutral for Singletary. If someone views it, though, as going from Houston to New York as a big negative and he dips in value, I think he'd be a decent buy as well. The truth is, though, I don't really want to be buying any of these running backs right now. I'll buy them after the draft, even if it means after the NFL draft, even if it means it's more expensive, but just because the Giants could go and sign somebody or draft somebody pretty early, suddenly they're at least in a 50-50 split. So yeah, don't I think Singletary could be a buy later in the offseason, but let's wait for the NFL draft first. Derrick Henry signed a 2-year, $16 million contract with the Baltimore Ravens. And that's one where, the one thing you're worried about, like with the Ravens and the Eagles would be another team like this. Oh, they don't throw enough to the running backs. Well, that's never been Derrick Henry's game. He's very rarely caught passes. I don't even know if he's hit 30 receptions in any season. I'm going to look that up right now. But I'm pretty sure he maxes out at maybe 20 catches a year. And so as a result of that, if the Ravens aren't a team that's necessarily known to throw to the running backs, and especially, they've got Mark Andrews, Zay Flowers, if those guys are winning, there's not much incentive to throw to the running backs if you can get success there. 2022, Derrick Henry had 33 receptions and 28 last year. Those are the first two seasons he actually eclipsed 20. And so that might be this Will Levis offense, especially last year. Maybe that's a little different than the Lamar Jackson offense. So he had typically been in the 15 to 20 range. I'd imagine that's where he is. But man, the ground efficiency, the number of red zone rush attempts, because that's the one thing about Lamar Jackson. He won't run a ton near the goal line. He's not going to. That's why I think there's a difference fantasy wise between Lamar and, say, Josh Allen, Jalen Hurts. Those guys have such ceiling from the touchdowns they get on the ground. Lamar gets his ceiling really more through the air. He's the kind of guy that can throw 30 touchdowns in a season. That's really where his ceiling comes. So I think this is a great fit for Henry and his skill set. I'm certainly much more willing to buy Henry than, say, Pollard. In fact, I was, earlier mentioned a dynasty trade I'd done now maybe 2 months ago, where one of the flips was I gave up Pollard, I got Derrick Henry. Now, the whole idea of that trade was I was giving up Drake London to get Michael Pittman. And I did that trade almost, that's what my opponent wanted to do. I think they wanted to get younger at running back. I didn't view it much different, to be honest. They're still third contract running backs that are both free agents. We didn't know where they signed. Henry ends up in the great spot in Baltimore, though. I think I'd much rather be part of, invest in that than I would, say, in Tony Pollard. So yeah, good win here for Derrick Henry. Next up, we have Austin Ekeler signing with the Washington Commanders on a 2-year, $11.43 million contract, which coincides with the Commanders moving on from Antonio Gibson as he joined the New England Patriots, almost about the same money, just on a 3-year contract, $11.25 million. And on the surface, Ekeler and Gibson pretty similar in terms of skill set. They're the best thing that they can do is catch the football, gain yards after the catch in space. And there's some touchdown upside as well, especially if they're getting a lot of red zone looks through the air. And I guess both of them end up actually in really similar situations because there's already an incumbent running back on those teams they're joining who is still on their rookie contract, Brian Robinson with Washington, Antonio Gibson with the Patriots. They're both rookie, or Ramondre Stevenson with the Patriots. Robinson, Stevenson, they're both rookie contract running backs. I guess the complicated thing in the Patriots case is this 3-year contract with Gibson. He's actually under contract longer because Ramondre, I believe, will be now entering the final year of his rookie contract. But between those four players, I think Brian Robinson is still the one I want the most. He showed to be getting some pass catching work last year, so it doesn't mean that Ekeler gets every third down opportunity either. And if Robinson's still the goal line back, I think there's some good upside there too. I think Stevenson to a certain extent, but especially in Dynasty, knowing Robinson is still under contract with Washington for multiple seasons, I'd venture to say he's of those four the one I want to invest in. Ekeler, actually, to be honest, kind of reminds me of Tony Pollard a little bit, in that. The thing with him and Robinson is maybe Ekeler does get some goal line work. Maybe Robinson gets some pass catching work, and suddenly it's the defined clear roles aren't so clear and defined. It makes it tough to know which week to play which back. Unless one of them is hurt, then we know the other one will probably get a lot of opportunity. So yeah, it's tricky in that regard. And I guess the thing with both the Commanders and Patriots that they share is looking likely that they'll be drafting rookie quarterbacks. Now, does that help Ekeler and Gibson because these rookie quarterbacks will be more prone to dumping off? Now, we'll get to rookie quarterbacks actually in our next episode, but a guy like Jaden Daniels might actually be more prone to run than he is to dump off. So I would actually argue that would be a negative because that's not really a situation you want your running backs in. So whoever drafts Daniels, that really, I think, hurts the pass catching back or the guy we perceive to be the main pass catching back. Looking at some other running back contracts. So we've got DJ Dallas signing with the Arizona Cardinals on a 3-year, $8.25 million contract. I don't really understand it. Dallas does play special teams quite a lot, so maybe there's a special teams aspect to this contract. Based on the money, it looks like they're saying they want him to be the main backup to James Conner. Considering how good the rookie Amari DiMercato did last year and how good I think Keyonte Ingram is, I don't really see a role for DJ Dallas, but maybe it's there. Maybe just because they paid him this offseason, we should pay more attention to him, but I'm really not interested in DJ Dallas at all. These next couple guys, though, this is where it gets really interesting. So we got Zach Moss signing with the Cincinnati Bengals. Mentioned earlier they traded away Joe Mixon. They got Moss for a lot cheaper, 2 years, $8 million. And with Chase Brown still under contract, it looks like those two will be kind of splitting the work. Maybe Moss is the lead back, though. So I think there's some upside there. Maybe there's a chance Chase Brown's the lead back, and that kind of relegates Moss to a really good backup running back. Maybe Moss will get the goal line work. Chase Brown will still be the third down pass catching back. So maybe there is that kind of split there. But there's also a chance that Moss is just a true workhorse and Chase Brown is more of a change of pace back. Could also be the opposite, where Brown's the true workhorse and Moss is the chase change of pace back. So there's a lot still uncertain with the Bengals, but because of that uncertainty, I think it makes Moss an appealing buy. Again, I don't really want to buy in Dynasty though, running backs at this point, because the Bengals could be a team where they complicate things further and they draft a running back and suddenly it's a three-man committee. And that's where we almost want to avoid the backfield as much as that's a good offense. So still to be seen, but maybe in redraft it might be a really cheap price this year. And I guess like other cases though, because Chase Brown's on the rookie contract, Dynasty, I think I still want him more than I want Moss, whereas I probably would rather have Moss in redraft. Still a little early though to be like making declarations on who to draft, especially at what point in the draft they'll be going at. This one was really interesting. The Minnesota Vikings, it's actually similar to what the Bengals did. They've, tried to restructure and then were going to release. They ended up trading someone, Mixon away, but the Packers couldn't do that with Aaron Jones. They asked him to restructure. He wouldn't do it. So then he signed, they released him and then he signed a 1 year, $7 million contract with the Minnesota Vikings. And with really only Ty Chandler, I suppose Dwayne McBride still technically on the team, but I don't think he's very good at all. With really only Ty Chandler there as the only competition, looks like Aaron Jones is going to be a workhorse back for the Vikings. So it's, quarterback is still the biggest question mark there, but maybe if with a lesser quarterback, they dump off the Jones more. And the truth is, he's not just a dump off running back. He can run routes and sort of a downfield aspect to Jones's game too. I don't know if that's going to be used as much considering Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison. It's kind of like the Saquon Barkley thing. So I do like Jones, but maybe he'll be a little overrated. Gus Edwards is actually really appealing. 2 year contract with the Chargers for $6.5 million. Right now, it looks like he's the lead back. I mean, Josh Kelly's still, actually, I think Josh Kelly might be a free agent. So, really, Isaiah Spiller is the only guy under contract right now. Chargers have also been linked to maybe drafting a running back, too. So, don't necessarily want to go buy Gus Edwards in Dynasty. But if he survives the draft, he then might be a really good. The Herbert-led offense, though the lack of receiving work is a little concerning. And to be honest, Gus Edwards is kind of strange for them in that. Like, he's even less of a receiver than, that Derrick Henry we're talking about, 33 catches in a season. Pretty sure Gus Edwards has never hit 15 receptions in a season. In fact, I remember looking this up the other day. Last year, he had 12 catches, and that was a career high. So, unfortunately, considering all the weapons the Chargers have lost, this is kind of puzzling. You figured they'd want a pass-catching running back. Does that mean a guy like Isaiah Spiller still has a role? If he's really cheap, he might be, again, once the NFL draft is done, might be a running back I want to buy in Dynasty. Right now, the Dallas Cowboys look to be rolling with Rico Dowdle. They signed him to a 1 year, $1.255 million contract. Not really what you'd think of lead back in terms of money, but he's literally the number one running back on that depth chart right now. So if you held on to some Rico Dowdle shares, he might be good. He's someone I think I almost want to trade away before the NFL draft because it seems like the Cowboys are especially destined to make that investment in a rookie running back. So yeah, this might be an open actually a sell opportunity for Rico Dowdle, even though he is the lead back on the Cowboys. And if they get through the draft and they haven't taken anyone, that's when I think I might want to go back and rebuy Dowdle or be aggressive on drafting him in redraft. I've got a couple shares now. I'm hesitant to whether I want to sell him or not, to be honest. So I'm one team's rebuilding, one team's competitive. So I look at that rebuilding team and I think, can I go send out offers to sell Rico Dowdle? That may be something I'll start trying to do in the next month. Also, AJ Dillon returned to the Packers as a backup, 1 year, $1.125 million. A few other running backs, kind of short 1-year deals. Salvin Ahmed returned to the Miami Dolphins. Dante Foreman signed with the Cleveland Browns. They also acquired Naheem Hines. Him coming off the injury, though, and I feel like that's more to do with special teams. They want Hines as a returner, basically. It. Foreman, though, looks like he could be, one of the top three backs on the team with Jerome Ford and Nick Chubb. Though with Nick Chubb's injury, Foreman might actually get a lot of carries early in the season. So let's see there. Trey Sermon returns with the Colts. Probably just in a depth backup role. He might fight for the main backup role behind Jonathan Taylor, but I don't think he has that yet. D'Ernest Johnson looked to have gained the main backup role last year with the Jaguars. They've brought him back. The Las Vegas Raiders bringing back Amir Abdullah. He looks to be more of a just a specifically third down pass catching back, more of a pass catcher than a runner. They brought in Alexander Mattison, who I think would be the main backup to Zamir White. Zamir White is kind of like Rico Dowdle, though, where right now the lead guy at the top of the depth chart. Does he survive the draft in that same role? Maybe. And this is maybe isn't the running back class to invest in guys to be your lead back. So they might be good buys now, but I want to wait till after the draft to go buy a Rico Dowdle or buy a Zamir White. If they survive the draft, I think they'll be great values. Just want to end real quick here with tight ends as well. So really the biggest tight end paydays were actually tight ends returning to their teams. Dalton Schultz. Came back to the Houston Texans on a 3-year, $36 million deal. Pretty good money for him, too, especially if it was critical of his decision. Okay, he turned down an extension from the Cowboys last offseason for the year league win over and just signed a 1-year deal with the Texans. I mean, to get this contract, though, I think that makes that worth it, that investment. And now he's in a great spot with a great young quarterback. Schultz should figure in prominently to this passing offense. Is likely behind Nico Collins and Tank Dell in terms of targets. They could also draft maybe a rookie wide receiver, but considering what's expected to happen, where there's a lot of elite receivers going early in the first round, by the time the Texans pick late in the first round, I don't think there's any receivers coming in to usurp either Collins or Tank Dell, at least not expected to right away. So Schultz looks pretty solid though as a top three, top four target on this team. Hunter Henry returns to New England Patriots, a 3-year contract. Worth up to $27 million. Talked about, yeah, there's not really a true alpha wide receiver. And I think especially where Hunter Henry gains value is as a red zone target. He could easily lead the Patriots in receiving touchdowns. And the old adage, especially the Patriots take a rookie quarterback or rookie QB, is they rely on tight ends so much. I think it depends on the skill set of the tight end. Are they running long routes downfield? Henry does seem like that kind of. He's not going to be a super high ceiling, but a high floor kind of easy target to get easy completions. So that in theory could help a rookie quarterback. They could also go with Brissett and Rourke. Then Hunter Henry is maybe tied to Nathan Rourke, which I think always ups every player's value. I only joking half kid there because I do think Nathan Rourke is legit. Now the biggest outside free agent to sign with any team was Colby Parkinson, a 3-year, $22.5 million contract with the Los Angeles Rams. The fact that they gave this much money tells me they're worried Tyler Higbee might not play this season with his ACL tear he got in the playoffs. A timeline could legit be that Tyler Higbee doesn't play a single game in 2024 and he only returns for the 2025 season. So for all intents and purposes, Colby Parkinson is currently the Rams' starting tight end. Now that probably puts him fifth on the team in targets. Because I think Kyren Williams is probably going to catch more. And then all three of the wide receivers they have, which includes the recently re-signed DeMarcus Robinson. I don't know that it's a great spot for a tight end, but he's the number one tight end there. To a certain extent, Noah Fant returning with the Seahawks is almost the same thing. 2 years, $21 million. I'm curious to, he's the number one tight end, but there might be three other receivers that got more targets than him. Do they pass more to the running backs, Ken Walker and Zach Charbonnet? Don't love it as a tight end spot, I think, in either of those spots, but they're lead tight ends, so at least there's that. Will Disley signed a 3-year, $14 million contract with the Los Angeles Chargers, but that helps also open things up for Fant to have both Parkinson and Disley leave. Fant to be the guy that sticks that says the Seahawks are confident in him because all three of those were on the Seahawks last year. Now Fant's the only one there, so he I guess Fant gets an up in potential targets in that there's. Whatever the tight end target is on any play will probably go to Fant. There won't be other tight ends fighting for targets. It's just how many times will the tight ends be targeted overall in the offense is more the concern. But yeah, Disley goes to the Chargers where they also brought in Hayden Hurst. So they've got those two And then Donald Parham's still there. So that's one where I'm having trouble wanting to invest in any of them, to be honest. Disley got the contract though, 14 million over 3 years. I don't really understand it. Do they really like him as a blocker? Is this going to be just a super run heavy team? I don't know. I don't really love, but the truth is the Chargers need so many weapons that maybe multiple tight ends could be relevant. So it's going to be tough to know where to invest there, I think. I guess you could say the same for the Chicago Bears. They brought in Gerald Everett, already have Cole Kmet. Do you know how good Kmet's been? I don't think Everett surpasses him, but they might almost be like a 50-50 split. So I definitely think it hurts Kmet, but I think it really hurts Everett. I think he would have been better off staying with the Chargers considering the lack of wide receivers there. I think if he was the main tight end in that room, he would gain a ton of targets. So yeah, I don't love it for Everett's fantasy value. Drew Sample returned on a 3-year, $10.5 million contract with the Bengals. They also re-signed Tanner Hudson and brought in Mike Gesicki on a 1-year, $3.25 million contract. So Sample got the money, but Sample's also for his whole career mostly been a blocking guy. So fantasy-wise, I think I'd rather invest in the other two guys on 1-year contracts. Mike Gesicki, Tanner Hudson. They seemed, especially Hudson last year, seemed to have a really good connection with Joe Burrow. He might still be the guy I want the most. In theory, Gesicki's athleticism makes him the most appealing. So yeah, I think I, you know, between Gesicki and Hudson, I think that's where I want to invest, but I'm not chasing the money and going after Sample because I think his role is mostly just to block. Finally, ending with a couple of team changes as well here at tight end. Jonnu Smith signed with the Miami Dolphins on a 2-year, $10 million contract. My first takeaway was I love that landing spot for him because he goes to a depth chart where he's instantly the best tight end, especially receiving wise. Durham Smythe, he's not even anywhere near close to the athlete Jonnu Smith is, and his ability with the ball in his hands, incredible. And you know, the Dolphins, they want to build through speed, and they had fast players at every position, both wide receivers, the running backs, all of them are incredibly fast. But yet tight end was one where Durham Smythe's really not that great of an athlete, not to the extent that the rest of this track team is. Jonnu Smith can kind of keep up. So he fits so perfectly with this offense. And one of the pushbacks I saw with my initial reaction, I think I tweeted some things out and someone said, "Oh, but this team hasn't passed the tight ends. How are you excited?" And my argument was they really haven't had a tight end anywhere near as talented as Smith to pass to. I know Gesicki was there the 1 year, but it also seemed like Jonnu Smith's a much better blocker as well, so he can get on the field more. I think they realized they needed a third legit pass catcher, and they didn't really bring in a third wide receiver. That makes me think Jonnu won't be number three on the team in targets. So I think he gets a ton of opportunity here with the Dolphins. He's clearly far behind Tyreek and Waddle, but so was everyone else last year. And I think Jonnu's better than all that. So I think he comes in and will be the number three target here. So I think a really good landing spot for Jonnu, even though some people might not think it's a good landing spot. Zach Ertz, a 1-year, $5 million deal with the Washington Commanders. They got rid of Logan Thomas, so basically replaced him with a guy the same age, although arguably a higher ceiling when he was in his prime. Not that he's in his prime anymore, but Zach Ertz looks to be the Commanders' number one tight end right now. So, rookie quarterback, that's like to what I said about Hunter Henry, but even further extent. Like he's going to catch the ball and give you nothing after the catch. So if you want just a completions for your rookie quarterback, Zach Ertz is there for that. Don't love his upside, to be honest. Maybe he gets a boost when they draft a rookie quarterback, but yeah, you can sell Zach Ertz. I think it's great because I don't know, at this point in his career, I don't necessarily want to invest in him. Got him in a couple spots and trying to see if I can sell him. Finally, Austin Hooper signed with the Patriots, a 1-year, $4.25 million contract. And he, I think, will be the clear backup behind Henry. Maybe they compete, but considering the disparity in money, it seems like the Patriots clearly believe in Hunter Henry. So I don't think Hooper really affects Hunter Henry that much. He's not really someone I want in fantasy. One other contract that wasn't defined, though, was Adam Trautman returning with the Denver Broncos. We'll see. I think Greg Dulch is still the favorite to be the lead tight end, but if he gets injured, like he had a ton of injuries last year, or maybe Sean Payton actually, because he's, you know, he drafted Trautman pretty early with the Saints and he's kind of stuck with them and he brought him over to Denver. I think there's a chance Trautman is competing with Dulcich for the starting tight end spot. So if Trautman is super cheap, he's someone I might want to go buy right now because I think people will still be excited about Dulcich as they should be. I also have Dulcich ranked ahead of Trautman. I don't think Troutman is completely forgotten. It might be an easy guy that you can maybe even pick up in some leagues, but certainly trade for as almost as a throw-in to a bigger trade. So a lot of free agent moves that happen. So hopefully we outline this pretty well here. I know rookie month will start in April, so on our next episode, we should be talking rookie prospects, specifically quarterbacks. Hopefully, Brad Harvin returns to join on X at the rundown underscore BH. I'm at Sunra Says. You can also follow the podcast account at FPC underscore fantasy pod. I also want to shout out PA the Second on X at PA underscore II official. He lets us use the song Wallet as our intro and outro music. So appreciate PA for that. Appreciate the song Wallet. Appreciate all the listeners who are gracious with their time, being willing to, you know, me ramble on for an hour about free agents. Anyone who's made it this far through the episode, you're a real one. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. And hopefully with multiple voices, we'll talk about rookie quarterbacks on the next episode of the Full Press Fantasy Pod.